Hello, everyone, and welcome to NWR Connectivity episode 395. I'm your host, John Reardon, and I am joined today by Alex DeFritis.
Hello.
We're going to talk about revisiting some games, which actually is going to, I guess, even with the new games that we're talking about that aren't new games, they're just what we've been playing recently, all of these are just sort of revisiting things. So we've got a good theme this time. I assume it's has it warmed back up where you are since the last time I talked to you?
It is gradually warming back up today. In fact, I walked out of my car in the afternoon. In the mornings, it's still pretty chilly, but in the afternoon, I was like, oh, I don't even need my jacket.
Yeah.
So nature is healing.
It's like up to 40 degrees where I am, which is feels incredible when you're used to like negative numbers.
Also, none of my pipes burst, so we're
good.
Good
job.
Yeah.
Well done.
We're living large.
Yeah.
With running water.
So we've got some listener mail later on. We've got a little bit of a topic based on that listener mail. But first, Alex and I have both been revisiting some games. Well, I'm revisiting a game. Have you played your game before?
I have.
Okay.
Should we just jump into it?
Yeah, go for it. Let's talk about your game.
Okay. So there is a series of games that I played before starting college. It was just like the last summer after high school, and I had a lot of time to just try out a bunch of different games. And those three were Chrono Trigger, Majora's Mask, and Earthbound. And I didn't finish any of them. So far, I have beat Chrono Trigger and Majora's Mask. Chrono Trigger, I got all the way up to like the final dungeon. I just, for whatever reason, I never beat it. I don't know why. Majora's Mask, I only ever got to the Deku Palace.
Okay.
And Earthbound, I got to the Mr. Saturn Village. So I don't know. I don't know why. I think it was because I guess I'll say it, like, I'm not sure if we're doing the Paper Mario Game Club, so...
Yeah, we've been going back and forth on that. We are going to do some sort of Game Club, but it might be much weirder than Paper Mario.
Yes, so in lieu of Paper Mario, I started Earthbound, which has just been something that it has been unfinished business for, like, 10 years now. So it felt like the opportunity to. I also have this nice... very nice CRT that I've been playing it on, and it looks gorgeous on there. So yeah, I've only been in the like second town Tucson now. I'm on my way to get Paula, and I'm just struck by how charming the game is, like, even after knowing after playing it before, and after just all the cult following and that status, like, it can feel like maybe the game was overhyped, but it does actually still surprise years later. And I'm having a grand old time just kind of inhabiting the world. It does help that I know going in that the game is going to throw bullcrap at me, that it has some outdated design. Like it's going to expect me to grind. So knowing that going in, what I'm doing is I'm just taking the game as it is and soaking in the vibes. And I'm finding that it's just, I don't know, it like ending the day with a couple hours of Earthbound every night has been just a pleasant treat. So I know that you don't like this game quite a bit. Like it's been an ongoing joke that this is not your cup of tea.
Right. Yeah. I struggle to get past the, I mean, I don't, you know, turn-based RPGs aren't my thing anyway. But like, I will say, like you mentioned Chrono Trigger, as being one of the other games that you had initially played alongside this, Chrono Trigger, I got through in high school just fine. Had a great time playing through that game. Even though it was turn-based, I thought it was really fun. Earthbound, I just could never, it always felt like it really plays like an NES era RPG.
Yes.
Which I just, especially like NES JRPGs, I just struggle with. I do agree that like the vibes and the writing and just the world are super delightful. The music's great.
music's incredible. The sound, yeah. just the sound, everything, the way yeah. that it looks and the way that it sounds is just genius.
I do think graphically, I think it's a little ugly. But I also think it's like going for a very distinct art style. So like, I understand that like they weren't going for like top of the line Super Nintendo graphics of the time. But I always just think it's funny. It kind of looks like an NES game to me. And then I play Earthbound Beginnings and I'm like,
that looks like
an NES game. Okay. but yeah, like I've never, it's just like when I compare it to every other RPG on that system, like, you know, the Chrono Trigger, Final Fantasy, all that stuff. Like, it just visually doesn't hold up for me. But that's just me being a graphic snob. Ye olden graphic snob.
Do the hypnotic, like, wavy patterns in the background of fights not do anything for you?
That's fun. That's probably, like, some... I don't know if that's, like, Mode 7 or if that's just, like, line interrupts or how they do that exactly. But there's some cool stuff there. But even there, it does feel very old school, where it's that Dragon Quest style thing of like you can't see your characters during combat.
Mm-hmm.
It's just you see a lineup of dudes in front of you in sort of this abstract space. Thing I will give it credit for in combat, though, is the thing where like once you get high enough level, then you can kind of just run over enemies without fighting them.
Yeah,
that's awesome. Like that. That's for great. All the crap I will give this game. That should be in every turn-based RPG should have that. It's kind of, I mean, Pokemon like Scarlet and Violet kind of have it, where you can send out your Pokemon and just have it murder stuff while you walk. That's really the only other time that I've seen something like that in a turn-based RPG. There are probably other examples. I'm not the most experienced person with them. But I do think that feature is awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with a lot of what you said. I think it's one of the rare RPGs where, like, the exciting part is not the dungeon, it's the town.
Yeah.
And that's where I get lost, and I'm talking to everybody, and most other RPGs I just be like, give me the baseline, what I need to do and where do I get it.
Yeah.
And this one, like, I'm making sure that I go into every single house and talk to everybody and get every little last bit of dialogue and every joke.
Yeah,
because that's where the heart and soul of this game lies. And then you go into a dungeon. It's not even really a dungeon. Like the first dungeon is basically just a series of caves with a boss at the end. It's very boring.
Is that not the definition of a dungeon? A bunch of caves and a boss.
Yeah. When I think of like a real dungeon, there's maybe more of a setting, maybe like a puzzle.
The setting is cave.
The setting is cave. The puzzle is getting to the boss.
Also cave.
You fight ants.
Yeah.
I love that the ants are like literally just like this. It's just two black pixels running at you.
Yeah.
And when like five of them run at you, it's kind of terrifying.
That game does do some nice stuff with like being able to see some enemies in the overworld. Mm-hmm. Like that's cool.
You see all of them.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's got good things. I think that a lot of my issue with Earthbound is like whenever there's something that you don't really vibe with, but that is extremely hyped up, you sort of like become polarized against it.
Yeah,
like you go from like, oh, that's not really my thing, to like, no, I actively want this thing to die. And that's kind of where I've gotten to with Earthbound.
It's like Neil and Paper Mario Thousand Year Door. I understand.
The sad thing with that is that Neil likes Paper Mario Thousand Year Door. Like,
oh yeah, you never liked Earthbound, so
right,
it's not
there's no
to hate it.
Yeah, I'm not like some disillusioned Earthbound fan. I'm just a guy that never liked it, but now he really doesn't like it because other people keep telling me I should like it. But yeah, no, it's fine.
I do think it's kind of overblown to be like, oh, we need to preserve this game on a subscription service,
right? Oh, that's oh man, just
its own can of worms.
But I forgot that was a phrase that was being used for NSO. Was yeah, we need to preserve it on NSO, right?
We need to stop using the phrase preserving games when it's just like a popular game I want.
That's well, and that's yes, you wanting to play something and a game being preserved are not the same thing.
Yeah,
and B, a subscription service is not preserving a game.
It's preserving that, shit.
Yeah, like that NSO is gonna go away eventually. Mm-hmm. Like how'd that preservation go for Virtual Console? Is that still preserving stuff really well?
Who doesn't already have an NSO on the next console? What if they change the name of the Switch to something that doesn't start with the letter S?
It's
no longer NSO.
They've got to keep the letter S at the beginning of all their systems from now on. Though I'm just, honestly, if we get to the next system and NSO actually transfers over, I'm going to be extremely impressed.
Impressed might not be the right word. Relieved?
Isn't it? Yeah, well, yes, but like I'm talking about Nintendo, so
they,
I am going to go
meet the bare minimum.
The bare minimum for them as far as like transferring a digital like shop.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm impressed. They did it okay on Wii U. It wasn't great, but it was functional.
Did you enjoy paying the fee?
Yeah. Yeah. But at least I didn't have to. Like, I could still load up those games. And in the case of the N64 ones, I was generally better off not paying it. Mm-hmm. Because it, in most cases, it made the game run worse. The only time that I thought they did a really good job was the 3DS. Like, the 3DS could just access the DSi shop. And all that stuff just transferred. That was great. Now it's gone, you know, so much for preservation. But they at least let me transfer stuff forward. Okay. It could have used an account system, but it worked.
We need a dual screen successor to the Switch so we can preserve DSi and 3DS games.
I almost just, even if it only had one screen, I just want one that flips closed again because it was so nice for protecting the screen.
Yeah, the fact that it's going to be, well, the rumors are that it's 8 inches, the screen size. That's going to be the case.
It might be. Like, what's the size of the regular Switch screen? Is that like 7?
7 for the OLED, yeah.
Okay. I can take, yeah, do 8. I don't know. I hear people complaining about like 8 inches, like that's not going to be very portable anymore, and I'm like, I don't know, like we have the Steam Deck, like surely if the Steam Deck counts as a handheld, then like literally anything is a handheld, because the Switch has a long way before it has the footprint of the Steam Deck.
I just don't think that the promise of the Switch was that we were going to combine like the handheld experience with the console experience, the home console experience, and that I'm not sure if we got that. Like, it doesn't feel like a whole lot of games on Switch feel like they are the scope of a 3DS game anymore. I can maybe say that for like Link's Awakening.
Do you mean scope in that like they're smaller? Like,
yeah, that they're smaller, that they're more like a pick up and play kind of thing.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, especially not for, yeah, that is, there's a different mindset to developing a handheld game than there is to developing a console game. I would agree with that.
It's like everything's a console game that you can play in short spurts if you want to.
Right, which is, I mean, that's the way I would prefer it. I always struggled to connect with the more traditional handheld games, so I like it better this way. But I get what you mean, where it's like that sort of design philosophy is kind of dead.
I guess I'm very fresh. What I'm thinking of right now is like spending 2 hours between chapters in the latest Fire Emblem games. Like, in Engage, you don't really have to, but if you want to optimize, like, it's there and I can't stop myself. Mm-hmm. Whereas like on a 3DS, there really wasn't that much you could do between chapters. You would just go into the next one. Maybe you'd like manage your inventory, but
yeah, that I've recently been thinking about going back to Engage because I never finished it. But then I remember how like tenuously I grasped all of the upgrade and customization stuff when I was playing it like from the start. And I think about going back to it now and I'm like, I would never be able to figure it out again. I'd have to just restart the entire game.
That is the frustrating thing of dropping an RPG. Like, it's always the case where it's just I've been gone from it for too long and now I have to relearn it. Might as well just start from the beginning. And so all those hours you spent playing it are almost gone. Like,
because I was enjoying it. I thought Engage was great.
It's fantastic.
Something else came out. Yeah.
I think it's, for whatever reason, it's unpopular to like that game.
I mean, wait till the next one comes out.
Sure.
And then it'll be fine. It's like Pokemon or any of those long running franchises. Whatever the most recent one is, ruined the franchise.
If you want to make that game instantly better, just start skipping the story. The gameplay is fantastic, though.
Oh, yeah. Well, speaking of Steam Deck, kind of, I recently, obviously, Steam Deck is a great place for waking dreams. It runs Wii U games pretty well. So I had thrown Star Fox Zero on there right away when I put a Wii U emulator on there. And initially I had the thought of like, I wonder, because I quickly realized I didn't have it set up to emulate the gyro. Like the Steam Deck has a gyro, but you kind of have to do a little roundabout stuff to get it working in emulators. And I hadn't taken the time to do that yet. So when I started up Star Fox Zero, I was thinking, okay, like I wonder how far I could make it in this game without gyro, because that's like one of the things that's always brought up about that game is like, oh, release it without the gyro controls and it would be better. And I've always had the argument of, you know, well, I think the game is designed around those. I don't think you can just take them out and have the same game. So I was like, I should try. That'd be interesting. I was quickly met with the roadblock because you literally cannot start the first level because you have to look around at all of your whole team before you can start Quernaria. So it kind of, that was a hurdle. But I got the gyro stuff working, did that, and have since been trying to make my way through the game without ever using the gyro unless I literally cannot progress without it. And so far, I am 3 stages from the end of the game.
Are you trying to prove something?
I just want to know. Like, okay. I want to see, because I've always had that argument of like, oh, I feel like the bosses and the level design is made for you to be able to fly one way and look another. Like, I feel like the level design is made for that. So if you take that away, A, is it still possible to beat the game? And B, do the levels feel worse without it? What I found is, so far I've only found one level that you literally cannot finish without gyro, which is Zonus. When you're using the gyrocopter, there's some spots where you have to use direct eye, the little robot guy, and like look up at something, which you can't do without the gyro. But the main thing I found is that it's not so much the levels that are designed for the looking around stuff, though there is some of that. Most of it is the bosses. Like all of the bosses are 100% designed for you to fly one direction and look another. Mm-hmm. And it is like, I have played Star Fox Zero a lot. I like to think I'm fairly good at it. The bosses of Titania and Ficina just whooped my butt. It took me like 20 minutes to do the boss of Titania. Because when you're playing the game normally, you very quickly learn this pattern of like, oh, I need to kind of orbit the boss and then look to the side and shoot them. And a lot of their patterns are kind of designed around you doing that to be dodging fire while you're shooting at them. And when you don't have the gyro, you now have to go straight in on strafing runs. And it completely changes how all those bosses work and makes them way harder, which I just thought was really interesting.
Harder in a fun way or harder in a, I shouldn't be playing it like this?
Harder in a way that definitely feels like you're doing something wrong.
Okay.
Like, I'm having fun just because I've played this so much that it's kind of fun to have a new challenge. Mm-hmm. But, like, if I were playing the game like this for the first time, I would not be having a good time. Like, it is a bad way to play the game. But I will say that most of the levels do play better than I thought they would without motion controls. It's largely just the bosses. The one level that I had trouble with, there's a level where they're like shooting. You have to shoot down these missiles that are going through a portal, and they have these weak points that are kind of rotating around them, and like lining up those weak points while you're chasing down the missiles without being able to fly up alongside them and then look at them while you're keeping pace with them is really hard. And I died like 3 times. But yeah, an interesting experiment in, could this work without the gyro? The answer is like, probably technically yes, but I think it would be a bad game. Granted, plenty of people think it's already a bad game, but I think it would be a significantly worse game.
Could they Skyward Sword it HD in some sort of way?
I was trying to think about that, and the problem is that they're already using the right stick. Have you played Star Fox Zero? I don't remember.
Not very long.
Okay.
And it was back when it came out.
Okay. Yeah, so the right stick leans your R-wing left and right, and then is also your accelerate and decelerate. And then your fire is actually on the trigger. Ideally, to map it to controls, you would have to map your gyro aiming to that right stick, like in Skyward Sword, which then you would still want, because your thumb would always be on that, to avoid an Eagle Claw, you would still want to, you'd still want to put fire on the trigger, and then you could put barrel roll on the shoulders, but you would probably have to like take your hand off of you. You'd have to put like the backflip and the U-turn. Yeah, you'd have to put all your brake and acceleration on the face button. So you wouldn't be able to look and also adjust your speed at the same time, which the game does have you do a lot. So like, I think you maybe you could Skyward Sword it, but it would be a crazy Eagle Claw to play the game just because it already kind of does use all of its buttons. So you'd really be...
What's the D-pad used for?
The D-pad might not be used for anything right now. But even then, that would still be another claw.
Mm-hmm.
Because you wouldn't be able to take your hands off the sticks, and you would need a hand on the triggers. So yeah, you would just Eagle Claw sort of both sides of the controller. So it could be done, but they would have to turn it into a Monster Hunter game.
Okay. Which is something they're probably not going to want to do.
Probably not. Well, and especially, I think that, like they could put it on... I mean, Switch has gyro controls, so like they could totally put it on Switch and have it play just fine. It does play fine with one screen, like that's not a problem at all, which I initially thought it might be, but that's not an issue. It's just that I just kind of assume that it has a poor enough reputation that they wouldn't bother. Even the Switch bump I don't think would be enough for Star Fox Zero.
I mean, they wouldn't be opposed to releasing a game that requires gyro.
Oh, that I think that would be, Nintendo. I think that part would be fine.
Yeah.
It's just that that game has such a negative aura.
Negative reception, and also it's...
Yeah.
It's not like a critical darling that didn't have praise, didn't right. get like the right financial reception. It's...
Right, because that's even like
it
Skyward...
It made no money and no one likes it.
Right. Even Skyward Sword, like, it got some critique, like, you know, had some fans not like it, but like, critically, it was super well received. Star Fox Zero was liked by neither fans nor critics. Yep. So, I mean, some critics refused to play it and then published a review anyway. They might just feel like there is no audience for this game. Why bother?
Why it's called Zero.
Miyamoto says it's called Zero because it's not a remake or a sequel or a prequel. Which he's lying. It's a remake. Like, it's 100%. That's what it is.
Imagining.
That's what... Look at the timeline, man. It goes in the same place two of them have already been. That's what it is. It's literally the same thing as Zero Mission. We've used this before.
Oh, man. Command made like did irreparable damage to the franchise. We just can't go forward.
I think they thought that was if you look at interviews with Imamura from when Command came out, he was like, yeah, this is the last one. He's like, this is the end. If we're going to do another one, it'll have to take place before this one. He's like, this is the end of the series.
Why would you make the conclusion of this series something that's so open-ended?
I don't know, but that's what they did. Anyway, runs really well on Steam Deck, though.
Breath of the Wild does, too.
Yeah, Xenoblade X does not. Xenoblade X is, playable, but I think it runs worse on Steam Deck than it does on Wii U.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah, still worth playing because it's Xenoblade X, but... okay, with that, I'm going to turn over to some listener mail that we got from Adolf Vega, which sort of comes in two parts, but I'll read the whole thing here. How often do you replay your favorite video games? I typically wait 5 to 10 years or wait for a remake before I even consider replaying a game. I have many all-time favorite video games that I have never replayed. Bonus question. So Chrono Trigger HD 4K or whatever remake is all but guaranteed to be happening in 2024, 2025, right? I haven't replayed that masterpiece since the excellent DS release. Sincerely, Adolf Vega. I kind of want to touch on the Chrono Trigger thing first, but I don't think that's guaranteed at all.
Also, it's way over 10 years, so it's available to be replayed.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it would, they should re-release it again or remake it. Sure. Feels like money on the table, but
yeah, it's curious why they haven't. So far, yeah.
They should at least. I'm at least surprised they haven't put the Steam version on Switch and other platforms.
That leads you to believe that they have something planned for it, but we just don't know what form that's going to take.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're hankering for Chrono Trigger, there's apparently a very good version of it on Steam. It has ultra widescreen support. And it has all the like anime cutscenes from the PS1 version, all the enhancements from the DS version. Like, it's kind of the ultimate best of version of Chrono Trigger. So that's there if you want to play it. And there isn't anything coming to Switch in the near future.
Yeah, I beat it on DS a couple of years ago, and it was perfect. Like, it's still a quality video game. I think it still holds up. I think it, Sea of Stars does not eclipse it, though. If you wanted to play something that plays like it, Sea of Stars is right there.
Yeah. Just play Chrono Cross. It's pretty much the same game.
I haven't told Neil this, but I did try and boot up Chrono Cross, and it's not the same.
No.
you go into one of those battles, it's like, what is this? Why am I look? Why are there three different percentages options that I can choose from?
It's also from the era where, like, good luck if you don't have the manual sitting directly in front of you.
What do the colors mean? Is this like Pokemon?
Yeah, they just throw you in and they're like, figure it out. Yeah. Yeah, it was a different time. Great soundtrack, though.
I should go back and try and play it with a guide open. That's the one thing. By the way, Earthbound guide is also exceptional. I love that it's like a travel guide where it like has like brochures of each town. That's another game that maybe you want to have a guide handy.
Do you have Chrono Cross on the Switch? Or yes. The re-release version? Okay. Mm-hmm. You can do what I did and just make it so you can't die, and then you never have to learn the combat mechanics.
Did you get through the entire game that way?
I got through most of it.
Okay.
Like, I played until I got bored, but that's largely just, you know, when it comes to like PS1 JRPGs,
mm-hmm.
I always think the ones that like Chrono Cross or like the Final Fantasy games where they have 3D characters on a 2D background, I think those ones age like cheese. I just hate looking at them on. If I'm playing them on like a CRT on original hardware, they look great.
I was just about to bring that up. The CRT like saves those games.
Playing them on like modern hardware, I hate seeing them. I'm fine with the reverse of that, like the games where you'll have like a 2D sprite character, but then in a 3D environment, those look great. Like I burned through Xenogears no problem. I thought it looked fine the whole way through. Playing it at original resolution or like at an updated resolution, it all looked great. Paper Mario is the same way, where it's a 2D character in a 3D world. I think that game, like, you can take the N64 Paper Mario, run it at 4K, and it looks remarkably good. But you do the Castle Town part of Ocarina of Time at 4K, it doesn't look so nice. Then you've got a really nice, crisp little 3D character running around just this pixely background. I think it looks horrible. Anyway, that's why I stopped playing Chrono Cross, not because there was anything wrong with the actual game.
I'm impressed that you stuck with it for so long, because that's a turn-based RPG that like has no qualms with being weird.
It was one of those games, like it's one that obviously I had never played it. I did like Chrono Trigger, and I hang out with Neil Ronahan too much. And so he talks about it a lot, and I was like, you know, I'll try it. And I think I had like a gift card or something, so I don't think I even like actually paid for it. It was just like, yeah, let's give it a shot. This way I can relate to Neil. It's easier than watching a football game.
Yeah. I hear him talk about it. It's like there's something special about this. And then
he loves it.
Like, how? Yeah. How?
I like that every time you and I are doing an episode without Neil, we wind up talking about an RPG that Neil has very strong opinions on, either negative or positive. And then we're like, oh, I wonder what Neil would say about this if Neil were here.
It's his fault for not joining.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did play some more Golden Sun. I'm having a good time.
Okay.
I don't know what Neil's problem is. I think Neil's crazy. Flawless game.
Are you actually playing Golden Sun, or is this a bit?
No, I played a bit further. Like I'm you know, out of the tutorial. I'm out in the world doing stuff. I've got some gin.
Are they just
gin? I've got some gin. I don't remember what I was doing. I had a lot of fun once I got to the open world the overworld, because it has that sort of like mode 7 thing where like as you move, it kind of like rotates the camera a little bit and you get the 3D perspective. And so I just played with that for a long time because I think those effects are fun.
How does the NSO display that game? because those the colors when you play just a straight ROM of it do not look good.
They, I mean, I think it's all of those GBA games are like really bright.
Yeah.
Right. I do think that if you play it with the filter on, like the not the CRT filter, but like the Game Boy filter, I think it looks really nice.
Okay.
It's definitely bright because Game Boy, but I think it looks good. And it helps that it's always been a very graphically pretty game.
Yeah, what it's doing graphically is impressive, but the colors are just off. Unless you're playing it with the right filter.
Yeah, if you play it without the CRT filter, I think it looks horrible. But if you have that on, then it looks good.
That's the nice thing about the NSO is that for the longest time, I'm not sure exactly how like Fire Emblem for the GBA was supposed to look. But then the NSO kind of gives you a definitive like this is the color palette we were going for. It's like, oh, OK.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's probably still a little I know there's plenty of complaints about NSO and wanting like more like controller customization option. I think the thing I would like most on that is just more visual options for like I would like better CRT filters. And just the option to customize it a bit more. I really wish it would let me run N64 games at 240 instead of 720 with the CRT filter, because some of those games, like especially the ones that use 2D stuff like Yoshi's Story, just 720 just murders those weird pseudo 3D sprites.
I want the borders gone. That's all.
Oh man, that was the other thing I did when I set up emulation on the Steam Deck is by default, when you use like EmuDeck or whatever it's called, it defaults to all these borders for all the old systems. Like when you boot up N64, it like displays N64
that.
System.
Cut that
and
out.
I was like, I never want that to happen. Like, don't do that.
I'm okay with negative space. I'm easily able to tune that out.
Yeah, it's not like I'm like black bars.
Yeah.
What am I gonna do? Especially like the entire system is black. It just kind of blends into the rest of the system. It's fine. It'd be worse if I had on the Steam Deck OLED, where it's like, no, I really do just want that to be black. I want that to be fully unlit. But hey, how often do you replay your favorite games?
Very rarely. In the past couple of years, something that I've been doing is I keep a list of games on my backlog that I want to get to. And a lot of those games are the unfinished business games that I already talked about, like the Chrono Trigger, Majora's Mask, Earthbound, Path of Radiance was a big one for me. Just games that like I got most of the way through in my childhood, but never finished for whatever reason. And I want to be able to close that book. So I prioritize a lot of those. I do not replay a whole lot of games, but there are a handful. So how do we want to go through this?
Oh, yeah. So we came up with, I asked
we
Alex if
initially
we
proposed
to come,
five.
We initially, I was like, what's like five games that you replay a lot? And then like, we couldn't think of five. No. We each have three. We'll go through our three. And then I do have one more that I will add, but I'll wait to make sure it's not on your list.
Probably not.
Probably. I mean, statistically, if there's three on each of our lists, that we're good chances it won't overlap. What's one of your three most replayed games, Alex?
I'll say Wind Waker at the bottom of this list. It's not one that I replay a lot, but it's one that I've gone through and beat all the way through three times and have at least started several times before. So
I guess that's, if we were to expand this to like, what games have you played the opening 3 hours to the most?
Yeah, there's plenty more.
Then I can add a lot to this list, but I'm
Star
going
Fox
like
64 would end up on the list. I, for whatever reason, I'll get there like
that
three
doesn't
or four
have
planets.
3 hours. You can't. That's if you replay the opening 3 hours, you've 100% of the game. Gotten all the trophies.
Yeah, not that the first 3 or 4 hours, just the first 3 or 4 planets.
Yeah, I don't know that I've ever stopped in the middle of Star Fox 64.
It's almost like because it's so arcadey, like I play until I have my fill and then I just put it down and then I'll always like restart from the beginning.
Right.
I've played it all the way through like twice.
Well, I'll say that since we're already talking about it, I just sort of wrote the Star Fox series. But it's mostly Star Fox, Star Fox 2, Star Fox 64 and Star Fox Assault. Those are the ones that I play through a lot.
Oh, I've played the opening mission of Assault so many times.
Oh, Assault is, yeah. Well, and actually, since getting the Steam Deck, I have, my amount of replaying Star Fox Assault has gone up significantly. Because just having that on there, and just sort of, that one is long enough that I'll do in multiples. Like, I don't usually do that in a single sitting, though I have a few times. That's one that I'll just keep a save file going and work my way through over and over again. I can play those indefinitely. And I do, like, I play OG Star Fox probably at least 10 times a year. It's a pretty constant.
Like, just once a month?
Yeah. Like, it'll just be like, yeah, I'm just going to do a run. It's 45 minutes long. Like, mm-hmm. So you just sit down and go, I'm going to do a run through this.
Yeah, don't watch my stream of me trying to play that 45 minutes. It was not 45 minutes long.
I was on the stream with you, Alex.
I'm telling your audience.
I saw the whole thing.
I'm still upset about the final boss of Adventures taking you 6 minutes, and it took me like half the stream.
We should play through another Star Fox game.
Yeah. I got to get through Nier first.
Oh, that's true. Are you almost, how many endings have you done?
I've done two endings. I'm about to get my third. The thing is that we're doing Nier Machete Order, where I'm playing Automata and then hopping over to Replicant. And I'm going to do an ending of Replicant, and I'm going to hop back over to Automata. So I'm basically playing two games in this jumbled mess. But it's been real fun. It's a good time. Check those out on Mondays.
Nier, I guess there is, I was going to try to make like some sort of alliteration thing for Nier Monday, but no. There really isn't a day you can put Nier on that is a good idea. Okay, I said Star Fox. What's another one of yours?
I'll throw Fire Emblem. Just, I think, like, piggybacking off of you with Star Fox as a series, like, Fire Emblem as a series is something I'm always going back to. Whether that's playing a old game for the first time, like, I actually, the reason why I put down or picked up Earthbound, aside from not having Paper Mario to play, is that I was getting really frustrated with Fire Emblem Thracia 776, and I kept on dying in these like two chapters, and I basically spent my entire weekend trying to get through those two chapters. So I was like, I need to not play this sadistic video game and play something that's nice and easy like Earthbound, which is not nice and easy. It's also kind of mean and sadistic in its own cute way. But yeah, I'll go back to Fire Emblem quite a bit. That's usually the GBA games, the two that we got in the West. So it's Fire Emblem 7 or The Blazing Blade and Sacred Stones. Those are games that I replay quite a bit. But the thing is that I've stopped replaying those because the ROM hacking scene for the GBA games has developed and matured so much that I feel like I can boot up a brand new Fire Emblem game with the GBA engine and have an entirely new campaign to play. So I very often do that instead. But yeah, this in general, Fire Emblem, it's a series that I play like three or four games of within a year.
Jeez. That's a big game to do that many.
Not the same game, just like within the series.
Right. But even three or four different Fire Emblems is still, that's a large amount of content. Though I guess like for the ROM hacked ones, like are they super deep on like story, or are you pretty much just getting a new mission pack?
So they're not high on like a presentation. Like, yeah. you very rarely get a map or art. You just have like the portraits talking over a background. Like, that's most of the story that's being told. Though there are a couple of ROM hacks that are pretty high effort and do actually incorporate. There are some that look better than the games that we got. They look like they could have been sequels, official sequels. They're really good. Sacred Echoes is one. It's like a demake of Shadows of Valentia. Mm. Looks incredible. It's brilliant what they were able to pull off. But it's limited story. Like, you're going to read between chapters for 5 to 10 minutes, but
yeah,
it's nothing substantial.
Neat.
Yeah, it's largely a mission pack.
Yeah.
With some support conversations.
That is kind of what I would want. I want less story in my Fire Emblem anyway. Like, that sounds great. So
yeah, well, there. Okay, so it does depend on what the ROM hack is going for. Some are like, this is a comedy. Some are like, this, we're trying to make a full-on story, and So it kind of depends from game to game, but for the most part, you're not going to spend as much time on the story as any of the other ones.
Right. It's not a Fire Emblem Three Houses.
No.
Where it's a visual novel that sometimes accidentally has combat.
Yeah. And the visual novel is somehow the best part.
Yeah, I suppose. I don't know why. I was relieved when I started playing Engage and realized that I do, in fact, like Fire Emblem. I just really hated Three Houses because it is one of those things where it's like, oh, maybe I just don't like this series anymore. Mm-hmm. And so it's nice to like go back to a different one and be like, oh, no, OK, they can still make new ones. I like, I just didn't like this one very specific one.
Time will tell what lessons they learn, considering that Three Houses seems to have the larger impact on the fan base and also just monetarily how much money it made.
Yeah.
So hopefully they don't stray too far from some of the gameplay, like the strategy elements of Engage specifically. Obviously, like it's not going to play the same, considering Engage's whole premise was very unique to itself. Three Houses was first and foremost about the story and the army building, resource management, and then like as a tactics game was very weak.
They need to spin off Three Houses into its own, like Persona to Shin Megami Tensei. Like Three Houses needs to be its own sub series of
Fire Emblem.
It could
be. I mean, it was made by,
it does
by
feel like a totally different game.
Yeah, it wasn't even made by Intelligent Systems. Well, I guess I don't know how far I want to say that. Like it was Intelligent Systems was definitely involved, but it was made
sure.
by the
Koei Tecmo, wasn't it?
Yep.
Yeah. So it just has a very different.
That's why it looks like ass too.
True. Well, wasn't it? It's like in the Warriors.
It's in
engine,
the Warriors
right?
engine. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It runs like it's in the Warriors engine.
Yeah.
Well, specifically like a Warriors engine game on Switch. A horrible combination. But my last one that I have listed, though I have thought of some other things, is just the entire Halo series, which I'm kind of always playing in the background. The campaigns, to be clear, not the multiplayer.
Okay.
And it's not that I'm like, oh, I'm going to play Halo 1. Okay, now I'm going to play Halo 2. Okay, now I'm going to play Halo 3. I kind of just randomly, at some point during the year, will be like, I want to play this specific Halo game. And then I'll finish that one and then just pick another one and slowly make my way through the entire franchise again.
Does your unconscious mind have a bias towards one particular Halo game?
I think it's probably Halo 2. Okay. Halo 2 and Halo 1. Nothing against Halo 3, but I just have the most nostalgia for the first two.
Mm-hmm.
Though I will say, if Halo 5 was on PC, then I would play that one way more, because I think Halo 5 is super underrated and I actually really like it. But I'm replaying Halo 4 right now, which is probably the one I've played the least, and it is okay. It is definitely the weakest game in that series.
I thought we came around to liking that one now.
We probably have. Let's see. Because, yeah, Infinite's now the one that ruined it.
Uh-huh.
Halo 5 is underrated, and Halo 4 was actually the peak. I think that's where we should be in the cycle right now. No, Halo 4 is still... I think Halo 4 is fine. It's just, it's like a super safe... It was 343's first original Halo game, and it very much just hits all of the beats of the original trilogy. Like, you can pretty much say, like, oh, this is this level, this is this level. Like, you can just kind
of
line
it
up.
The Force Awakens with, of Halo.
Right, yeah, you can line it up with all the key moments. And, like, it plays well. I will say, I'm playing it on Steam Deck, and I've played it on, like, Series X before as well. For a 360 game, holy crap, that game looks incredible. Like, that game,
I do forget that it was
beautiful.
A 360 game.
Yeah, it was a super late 360 game. And it is probably one of the best looking 360 games ever made. Like, it has no right looking as good as it does. I do think it ran at 30 frames per second when it came out, but if you play it on like a modern system, then you can get it up to 60 really easily. And it's very impressive.
Can you not play Halo 5 on the Series X?
You can. Yeah, it looks great.
You just prefer to play on PC.
No, I was just saying that I go back and forth. So like right now, like I like having the option to play it in multiple places. It's sort of one of those games where, like, if you just put it in front of me on a random screen, I will play it. And so Halo 5 is just the one I've played the least, specifically because there's only one screen I can play it on. Like, on my Steam Deck right now, I have every other Halo game except Halo 5. So it's if I'm going to play one, odds are it's not going to be the fifth one, even though I actually really like it. That was one that I didn't play. It's the one that I didn't play right when it came out, and it got horrible reviews. And then I played it like years later and was like, oh, this is great. It just had a really bad marketing campaign, so people thought it had a different plot than it did.
I thought people didn't like the squad-based aspects of it.
I think the thing that I remember was that, like, the trailers were very much like, you're Spartan Locke, and you need to hunt down Master Chief because he's gone rogue. And, like, that's what the trailers were about. And in the actual game, that's, like, the first two missions. And then immediately after those two missions, Locke and Master Chief are just like, yeah, we're buddies, let's go do this thing. So I think people just got annoyed that the premise upon which the game was sold was not what the game was about. I thought the squad stuff was pretty great. Reminded me of stuff that they kind of started experimenting with in, like, Reach. But then I did have the thought that technically, I think the original Xenoblade is probably one of my most replayed games.
No,
not because I've ever played it on the same system twice, but because Nintendo keeps selling it to me and I keep buying it.
You've played it three times all the way through.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which, I mean, for
considering how big that game is,
that's a lot. That's probably like nearly 300 hours of my life has been spent playing the first Xenoblade.
I beat the first one in 40 hours.
Though you were playing on, you lowered the difficulty.
Yeah, I played it on easy and I burned through it. Like, it was a whirlwind week of me just absolutely slaughtering that game.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I made pretty good time on the 3DS version. The Wii one took me a long time because it's first time through and there was no easy mode on the Wii version. So it was a grindy game. And then I was just going to say that if we count games that I've played the beginning of a million times, then Last Story is probably up there. Because that's one where I just constantly go like, oh, that game's great. And then I play the opening 3 hours and I'm like, yeah, this is great. And then I never touch it again. And by the time I do, I just restart it.
Yeah, A Link to the Past is kind of like that for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a great opening. Like, it's fun to replay the opening. So I'm never upset, but I have yet to play it all the way through to the end.
Yeah. Yeah, that is one I've played honestly, a lot of Zelda would count as that.
Yep.
There's a lot of Zelda games that I can give you that not first Twilight Princess, by heart.
But yeah, a lot of other Zelda games.
Yeah. Yeah. Minish Cap. A lot of the handheld ones. Link's Awakening is like that for me. I think I've actually only finished Link's Awakening once. I've never finished the Game Boy Color.
It was on the Game & Watch
Switch version. It was on an emulator.
Okay. The Game & Watch is emulating it.
That's true. No, I mean, honestly, I've said before, but if I'm going to replay it, I would rather play it on Game & Watch than on the Switch. At least the Switch remake. Is the original version on NSO?
I feel
like it might be. I don't remember.
Could be.
If I'm going to replay it, I am not going to play the Switch remaster because that version runs so bad. You should not be getting outperformed by a Game Boy game. That's a bad thing for your remaster to do.
I'd agree.
Is that a show?
Oh, no. I haven't told you my third one.
Didn't you?
No.
Did I lose count?
I said Wind Waker. I said Fire Emblem.
Oh, well, I hope it wasn't Xenoblade.
No, I've only played Xenoblade the once.
Okay.
So my third game that I've replayed the most times is The Great Gatsby for NES.
Why?
So this is a fan game. It started out as a Flash game that came out in 2011. Then Flash disappeared. And I remember tweeting that the worst loss of Adobe Flash is that I'm no longer able to play The Great Gatsby for the NES. And then the creator of that fan game responded and said, oh, yeah, we made an NES ROM. So now it just kind of lives on any of my emulation devices, on my Analog Pocket, on my Mr. Console. Like, it only ever takes like 20 minutes to play through the entirety of it. It plays great. The soundtrack is really fun. It's just like a cute kind of a gag game. And it's weirdly like the best playing NES game I've ever played. Like it's also like it's super easy in terms of NES platformers. It takes no time at all to get through the entirety of it. So yeah, anytime I'm like testing out a new emulation thing, I always go to The Great Gatsby for the NES. It's really
good.
You can
buy that. You can buy a repro card of it from AliExpress for $17, and then you could play it on real hardware.
I don't have an NES though.
You can buy an NES for $50.
I should get an NES just so I could play The Great Gatsby on.
Like, have that be the only game you own for. it just lives in the console. You never take it out. This is just the box that plays The Great Gatsby.
It's so good. And at the very end, you get the final passage from The Great Gatsby. And it's weirdly like a heartfelt ending. It's anybody who's listening should just try it out. It will take you no time at all to get through it. And I think it's kind of special.
You should stream it.
I should. Yeah.
That'd be a weird stream, but that'd be awesome.
More like American literature classics should have NES games.
Just Great Gatsby.
That should be our next feature topic.
I'm trying to think now. Like, there's an NES Tom Sawyer game, right?
Yeah, that's the Square Enix one with the horrible racism, right?
I mean, that's accurate to the book.
Yeah.
Well, you said America. I was going to say, if we're just doing classical literature.
Oh, yeah, we
can
do classical literature from the world over, yeah.
Okay, then you've got Dante's Inferno, one of the greatest book adaptations.
Does that have a game?
Dante's Inferno? Yeah. Have you not played Dante's Inferno?
I have not.
It was made by EA. It was on 360 and PS3. It's a God of War clone. And it kicks ass.
Oh, I was talking about NES specifically.
Oh,
yes.
Okay.
Dante's
okay.
Inferno, the God of War clone. Yes. Yeah,
okay.
I have heard
okay.
of this.
I was so excited to introduce you to an incredible game just now. I'm like, bro, stop the podcast. We're playing Dante's Inferno. And was Lord of the Rings on NES or was that on Super Nintendo?
I think it's Super Nintendo. There's a lot of Lord of the Rings games. It's a whole mess. Because some games had like the book rights, some games had the film rights.
Okay, yeah, it's the Super Nintendo. Okay, so just Tom Sawyer and Great Gatsby.
Well, I was saying that our next feature topic should be what classic novels would we want to see adapted to the NES.
That's
see
a good
the
idea.
Grapes of Wrath.
I mean, the natural pick would be Huck Finn, like finish what you start, Square Enix.
to Kill a Mockingbird.
I would want To Kill a Mockingbird to just be like an Ace Attorney game.
Yeah.
Yeah, Scarlet Letter.
It's a hentai eShop game.
Oh yeah, it is. Yeah. That might already be on there. We should probably check. It's probably on sale. You can get the deluxe version that comes with a clock. We should just go into game development and make hentai classic literature adaptations for the Switch.
I mean, there's got to be a market for it, right?
Clearly. I mean, somebody's buying the games that are up there now, right? Like they must be selling to someone.
A public domain porn games.
Pride and Prejudice.
Yeah,
you could do a whole Jane Austen series of NES porn games.
There's so many.
There are. Such a rich canvas to paint from.
Les Miserables.
Ooh. We should go into business.
Yeah, after this this show wraps up, do you wanna like get a business plan?
Just go
together?
Start making any how hard can it be?
I mean,
if we can't get them in NES, we'll just start making them on RPG Maker.
With your knowledge of 3D and my access to the Internet Archive, we can really make some money.
Yeah, my knowledge of 3D is going to be really useful for NES games. It'll be super easy.
I was thinking like the eShop, you know,
because
that's where the real money's at.
But you got to do limited run prints of like NES cartridges of them. Honestly, why isn't Great Gatsby on the eShop? Why isn't that? They should put that on. NSO should open itself up to like homebrew stuff. Like if homebrew people want to pay to have their stuff on
NSO. I'm thinking as to like, why wouldn't they?
Like, that would be awesome.
I mean, it was originally made for Flash for free. I mean, well, I'd pay for like extra levels, you know.
Great really Gatsby's in public domain, right?
Yeah,
yeah. So like, there's no legal issue.
Is it public domain?
I don't know. I'm just assuming it is because it's old. It is in public domain as of 2021.
Okay, so now recently
is the time. Yeah, you should reach back out to that guy. Maybe NWR can publish it. We could enter publishing. Our first game could be Great Gatsby for NES on Nintendo Switch.
Mm-hmm.
Partner with Limited Run to do cartridge printings. And then we do a deluxe version where it's a hentai game.
I would absolutely buy a physical copy of The Great Gatsby for NES.
They're on Etsy right now.
Get Limited Run, Super Rare Games. No, it has to be a Switch cart, and it has to have like a really complicated collector's edition with like a lot of weird trinkets.
It could just come with a copy of the book. It comes with a copy of the book. But it's not the original book. It's an adaptation of the game into novel.
It's a novelization of the adaptation of the game. And then there's also going to be another book, but it's not the book. It's a guide for the game.
Right. Well, you gotta have, I mean, it's a complex narrative that you need a guide to find your way through.
Yeah.
Have you ever read Great Gatsby?
I have.
Did you like it?
I really enjoyed it when I read it in high school.
Okay. I hated it, but I also read it in high school, so that might be why. Oh, surely there's a Frankenstein NES game. That's gotta be.
It's very short. Mary Shelley's Frankenstein is a video game that exists. Yes.
Okay, there's another classic literature NES game.
Is that on NES specifically?
Yes.
Oh yeah, perfect. No, it's SNES. It's Super Nintendo.
I'm looking at one on NES right now. There might be multiple Frankenstein games.
Frankenstein the Monster Returns is NES. Mary Shelley's Frankenstein is SNES.
Is that based on the movie with he was the director of the first two Thor movies?
Oh, Kenneth Branagh.
Yes, him. He played Dr. Frankenstein in a 90s Frankenstein adaptation that I believe was specifically titled like Mary Shelley's Frankenstein.
Oh, yes. You're correct.
Okay. I think it had Helena Bonham Carter in it. It was okay. Oh, and the monster was played by I can't think of anybody's
Robert
name
De Niro.
Yes.
What?
It's like not a good movie, but it is kind of accurate to the book.
It's more accurate
to the book than any other version of Frankenstein I've ever watched. But it's weird. Every casting decision in that movie is interesting, and I kind of dig it. They just went real chaotic and hit shuffle when it came to casting.
I love the look of 90s like period piece films.
Yeah, you should
early
watch
2000
it.
Ones. The Count of Monte Cristo. I think that's early 2000s, but.
I suppose we should probably like end this episode.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, now we're just
because
talking
we know
about
we
it.
Have to have that business meeting. We probably don't want it recorded.
Yeah. If you would like to invest in our classic literature NES hentai game developer company, send your checks to connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com. You can follow us on Twitter or X, whatever, at Connectivity NWR. One of these days I'll remember which order it goes in on there. Alex, thanks for joining me.
Of course.
And we will see you all next time. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.